Welcome to New Human Living Radio Show, bringing you powerful interviews to awaken the power in you. Learn more at newhumanliving.com. And now your host, Les Jensen.
Alchemy. To be an alchemist. To transform one thing into another. Tonight we have Paul Selig on the show, and the topic is Alchemy, the name of book two of a trilogy of Beyond the Known. Alchemy. Do you ever look at social media or mainstream media and see chaos going on? Or perhaps look at attributes of your own personal life that you'd like to change, you'd like to transform? Turn one thing into another. The notion of being an alchemist is perhaps as close as graduation as we might get in the physical form, where we've mastered the ability to transform one thing into another. I think we're in for quite a conversation tonight. We can get right to it. Paul Selig, the author of Beyond the Known, Realization, is one of the foremost spiritual channels of the world. Alchemy is composed of pure, unedited words of the guides as they have been channeled through Paul. Their message is poignant and beautifully written, humming with wisdom and insight for all those who are ready and willing to receive their words. Paul attended New York University and received his master's degree from Yale. A spiritual experience in 1987 left him clairvoyant. Paul is one of the foremost contributors to the field of channeled literature working today. He offers channeled workshops internationally and serves on the faculty of the Esalen Institute. He lives in, I believe, Hawaii now, where he maintains a private practice as an intuitive and conducts frequent live stream seminars. Join me in welcoming Paul to the show. Welcome to the show, Paul.
Thanks for having me.
You've been on the show quite a few times now. I'm always glad to have you back. The book we're going to talk about tonight is Alchemy, which is book two of Beyond the Known trilogy. How have you found the material as you write these books? Do you see an evolution of content as you write more and more books?
Yeah, I do. I mean, you know, I don't write the books. I'm a channel, so I literally sit in a chair and take dictation. The books are spoken and recorded and in front of an audience, and then they're transcribed. So it's the unedited transcriptions that become the books. But I'm seeing a very clear arc to the teaching at this point, and I'm, you know, surprised by it. It's not terribly comfortable for me, but I have to say that these guides have been quite consistent in their messaging since they began dictating the books to me in 2009. So in some ways, the DNA for the journey they seem to be taking their students on was present in the first book and continues to be expounded upon, unpacked, and explained, and then sort of taught in vibration in ways that people can feel and experience as the teachings have continued in the subsequent text.
Right. Well, you talk about, I guess, the impact on you as you bring this material forth. A lot of times in the book, it'll say, and we pause now for Paul, who's having trouble wrapping his noggin around this.
Yeah. It's still true. It's always been true. You know, my biggest problem with channeling is that I'm the channel. And, you know, I have my name on the cover of these books that I didn't write, And even though I understand that it's a channel text, because I am a collaborator of a kind, I'm being used to bring this through, and there's a partnership there that I understand, I feel a level of accountability that I probably shouldn't for the quality of the dictation. And if I'm confused by something that they're saying, I question it.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense. Well, I mean, you are the face of the material. So it seems like as you're channeling this, you're really wanting to understand what they say, and it's quite evident that they're presenting material that is so out of context for the rank and file thinking, if you will, of humanity. How do you see this material progressing over time?
Well, they're finishing the third book of the current trilogy now. They're about halfway through. They've been dictating this one since, you know, the latter part of June. So I understand where they're going now, and I'm continuing to be challenged by what they're saying. I mean, they're talking about the kingdom and the realization of the inherent divine in all matter, in the world that we see. And they talk about how this is done, how this is claimed by us as we align to what they say is our true nature. And it's a teaching of alchemy. It's a teaching of really transposition. They've been saying for books that everything is operating in vibration, and any song can be sung in a higher octave. And what they're doing with their students is bringing their students to a higher level of resonance. They call it the upper room,
right?
The octave above. And from the octave above, they say you can lift what expresses in the lower vibrational field by nature of your presence. In some ways, you become a portal to what they call the upper room through the field that you align to. And so I understand this. So this is what they're teaching now, is the being of this at that level. And I'm sort of just trying to keep up with the dictation. Honestly, they've done 19 lectures so far for the next book, and I haven't read one of them. They've done more than 19. 19 have been transcribed.
Right.
And I paste them into a file, and I go check with you know, what they say is chapter 1, 2, 3, and 4. But I don't want to read it yet because I can't wrap my brain around it.
Right. It's like break off the rearview mirror. I don't want to look. I understand what you say because, I mean, you're more or less the face of the material regardless. I mean, it's your name on the book. And yet the material is so profoundly different than what traditional thought or philosophy might have us think of. So I really applaud you for, I would call it bold and some courageousness in there to bring forth this material and put your name on it. And here you are creating yet another book with yet a whole new arena of perspective and material. Have you gotten more comfortable in this role over time?
I suppose I have. I was an academic for 25 years, and I left that career, that life, about 5 years ago now. And I've adjusted to this being what I do, and I've learned finally to think of this as my job. Like, I show up for my work.
Right.
Do the training, take the dictation. I'm very clear on what I'm not. I'm not a spiritual teacher. I don't have aspirations to be one. I really don't. I'm certainly not a guru. I'm a guy with this very odd skill set that is doing his best to show up in some integrity for this work that I may never really understand. You know, I mean, the woman who channeled A Course in Miracles, Helen Shookman, I haven't read the course, but I know this quote from her, and I heartily understand it and agree with it. She said about her work as a channel, "I don't believe it, but I know it's true." And that's often how I find myself. I can't fault the teachings that come through. They're consistent. They don't contradict, as far as I can tell, and now 9 books, because they're on the 9th now. And I know that people are being helped in real ways by this stuff. So I show up. I'm more comfortable saying, I don't know, publicly. I'm not interested in having people project their own issues onto me or my role or what I do. I don't think of myself as special. I don't think this makes me special. I think it's something I seem to have facility for whatever reasons, and that this is past life or who knows what it is. But it's what happens through me. So I'm having a funny experience now. You know, I was in Costa Rica channeling at a retreat in March when New York City, where I live, was shut down, and I never went home.
Right.
You know, the guides have been saying things for years like, you know, you can leave this class and never go home again. You don't have to. You just think you do. And now I'm on Maui.
Right.
A friend found me a place to stay, thinking I may never go home. I've been living out of one suitcase for the past 4 months with my laptop. And I'm finding contentment, strangely. But I also am finding that the idea of community around this kind of work is deeply beneficial and meaningful. And that doesn't mean community around what I do as a channel, but community in general, people that are doing their best to sort of live a life in agreement to, I don't want to say shared values because it sounds corny and it also sounds exclusive. People who are doing the best they can,
sure,
with the information they've been given, that's going a very long way for me. And that's actually resolving, I think, some of the conflict that I've had around what it is I do. You know, I've seen videotape of me channeling, and, you know, I look quite nuts doing it. And I know that. And I've had to say, well, that's just the way it looks. And this is what it is, and I can accept it, even if other people can't.
Well, and maybe in a odd sort of way, you're kind of off the hook in the sense that the actual material is not your philosophy. And now, like you were mentioning, you don't want to be tagged as a spiritual leader or some kind of a guru, and yet you're the vehicle of very quote spiritual unquote material, and the content of the material is quite appropriate for the notion of a guru's teaching, but you get to take a step to the side and say, but it's not me. So, I mean, I'm just making an observation here. You know,
I mean, if you say that the channeling isn't real and that it must be me, then that would mean me getting off the hook. But in fact, I consider myself to be a radio.
Sure.
As a psychic is comparable to what I do as a channel, and I hear. I'm primarily clear audience.
Sure.
So it's kind of like the radio isn't the transmission, but you experience the transmission through the radio, and I happen to be the radio that this transmission is coming through.
Try
to keep it.
And another thing I found curious is you're talking about living out of a suitcase for months on end, and in the book they talk about surrendering your past, so to speak, and you're finding yourself going through the steps of it, perhaps unexpectedly. I found that curious as well.
Well, I don't recall that in the book. You know, I recall about a third of the content of the books from when I channeled them. I sort of remember the gist or the larger gesture at times of a chapter or a dictation. I don't read the whole book until I'm proofreading it. And this one, I happened to do the audiobook here on Maui a few months ago and sat in a studio and read it aloud. And I got to hear the book as others had heard it, delivered, and experienced its coherence. And I'm grateful for that. They talk in the book about not being able, not being shown the path before you until you take the next step, and to learn to trust being in the unknown. And, you know, this book was channeled last year. It was finished, completed over like 3 or 4 months. I think it wound up the dictation sessions in June. And, you know, they're very much speaking to the times that we're in now and learning how to understand and navigate these strange times. And, yeah, I don't know where I'm going. I don't know if I'll be back in New York next week, if I'll be here. You know, I don't know much right now. And I'm finding that to be somewhat a relief. You know, my monkey mind gets to soften and be quiet in these times.
Right.
So, yeah, I am living the teaching, I guess, now that you mention it.
Well, yeah. Well, the notion I get, and I think this book reflects it, is, I mean, just to philosophize, the soul doesn't have a need for a linear path, and the ego loves something linear that it can kind of understand and cling to. And so the more you make your expectation empty, the more lucid and fluid the, or perhaps the broader span of options opens up, the more you let go.
You got it. You know, I mean, you said it very well, and I'm not somebody traditionally who's comfortable with not knowing.
Right.
You know, I'm a worrier. My worry is all about possible futures and possible outcomes. And, you know, when that's not present, I'm quite a happy man, I have to say, when I'm able to do that. I think some of what I've learned in the last few months is how to just be there, because I don't have the other information. You know, I don't know what's on the other side of where I sit right now. Many of us don't, I think. And perhaps that's the opportunity of these times. You know, we don't get to know in the ways that we've had, and perhaps something else then can be shown to us or revealed.
Well, it's like standing on the shore and putting your foot in the water looking for a rock to stand on, and you can't see the rock, and to trust. It's really an exercise in trust that the consciousness or the perspective or the, I guess the ego might like the word strategy, of the upper room of ourselves having our back, so to speak. And, you know, the first few times you go to let go of a rigid view of your future, there can be so much that's unknown that most people just pull back and stay in the confined expectation of what they would prefer.
Yep. Exactly. I've heard the guide say almost those words. So, yeah, we're on the same page.
Well, now, do you see this material wrapping up, or is there going to be so many books that, I mean, it seems like you've been doing this more than a decade now, right?
The first book was dictated in 2009 and was published in 2010. And they're on their ninth book now. So there have been, yeah, a lot of books in the past, almost 20 years. And I would like, if it's possible, after this book, a little bit of a break. I wouldn't mind writing my own book, maybe.
Right.
Like my story of how this happened. And I would be writing that more for myself to try to understand it a bit. And then I'm okay. I've heard from the guys that there are more books. I don't know. Every time they finish a book, I think there's nothing else for them to say. I think that they've done it.
Right.
And I find that that's not the case. So I go, okay, here we go again. And consequently, it's always a bit of a challenge. When I was touring all the time, which was all the time. I mean, I was on the road half the month doing workshops. The guides would, you know, the books were done in those workshops, but also once a book was completed, they'd start beginning to teach to the next book and preparing the next teaching. And so by the time they would usually start to dictate the book, I was familiar with a few of the new concepts, not enough to get me past an understanding of, say, the first or second chapter, but how they're working now, which is different because I'm not on the road all the time. I'm doing things on live stream seminars, you know, online, and you know, they've become very popular. May be different, you know. I assume that as long as I'm willing to sit in the chair and take the dictation, they'll probably be willing to deliver books. Hopefully they have something more and more valuable to say. I don't see them wanting to talk just for the sake of filling pages.
Right.
They seem to have a much higher agenda. So at that level, I'm happy to be in service. I just wouldn't mind a little break.
Sure.
A year, you know, from the books, because the books are challenging for me to bring through physically and emotionally. You know, when I'm doing them in front of a live audience, the guides would say at the end of a lecture, this is in the text, or this is the introduction to the next text, or the title of the text is, and this was the first installment. So I would hear at the end of a lecture, which always sort of made me relax because it allowed me just to channel. And right now, I've had to convene a small group of students, some of whom have been there for prior dictation. And the guides, we're meeting, you know, five times a week or four times a week in session, and the guides are delivering the text to them. And so far, it's all been for the book, and they're also doing book delivery in my regular Wednesday night live streams and in these five-day seminars. So they're just talking away. And I find it stressful because the rule with the books has always been I don't get to go back and change things.
Right.
Like if I disagree with something, I can't cut it out of the book.
Right.
We had a gap in the recording, like a 3-second gap, where we lost two words and I had to reconstruct it. And I'm sort of so careful about this that my hunch is that in the published version, there will be a footnote saying reconstructed from gap in tape, you know, because I don't feel that if I get to go in and mess with it, it's authentically a channel text. It's either the guide's book or it's not. And now I've been strict about that for some reason. I mean, occasionally I'll mispronounce a word or the recording will be inaudible and we'll have to reconstruct something, but it's so rare. Like there may be three words in the entire last book, the one that the alchemy that you have, that were misspoken. And it's usually a word that I just didn't know. You know, that happened in alchemy too. There was a word that they kept saying, and I wouldn't repeat it because I didn't know what the word was, and I thought it wasn't a word. And the guide say, Paul's refusing to say the word. And it was a great word. After the dictation, I said the word was penumbra. I didn't know what it was.
Right.
The whole class looked up penumbra, and it's a beautiful word. It was the perfect word. It could have been the title of a chapter, for all I know, which was the light that appears from behind the cloud. It was the perfect metaphor, the perfect word. It's just a word that I've not once used in a sentence in my adult life before then. So I couldn't say it, you know. They found ways to get around that. They'll use a sound alike once in a while, but I'll have to just say what it sounds like, and then we can find it. Anyway, that's that.
Well, the your diligence in keeping it articulately accurate is very refreshing. Like, you know, in all the social upheaval and whatnot, the notion of the Constitution has come up in some circles, And the curious thing is, or perhaps the Bible or something like that, and when somebody steps up and says, well, I'm going to present a better idea than the Constitution or something like that, I just cringe in the notion that the context of which the Constitution was written in is incomprehensible by us today. And to just casually tweak the language. So I'm applauding you for your diligence in making sure that the language of what is coming through, it has impeccable integrity through your diligence.
Thank you, but that's my job. You see, I'm a glorified stenographer for the guys. That's really what I am. That's just, you don't even notice the court stenographer in the room. She's doing her job well, or he's doing his job well, and it's the transcript that lives on. And that's my feeling about this. The very first book, I Am the Word, the guides use the male pronoun exclusively in the book. He who decides, or one day he will know, or man will know. And Victoria Nelson, who's an academic, who was on the phone for those dictations, she was taking notes, I was recording, and then later transcribing the recordings, she complained to the guides about their use of the male pronoun. And the guides were oddly somewhat defensive. I thought they're saying we're speaking of humanity, humankind, not man. They weren't speaking about gender. But since then, I have to say, they've been, the next book was so nuts because they switched pronouns and genders in a sentence. It drove the copy editor crazy, you know? When he decides that she will no longer, they just had a field day with it, and now, oddly, they've almost settled. Well, interestingly enough, because so much of this stuff was done in live workshops where the audience might have been 80% female,
right.
70-80%, the guys would often just use the female pronoun exclusively, and I was surprised by that too. So you read the books, and there's a whole bunch of she's, but I've learned that that's not what they're talking about.
Right.
They really aren't particular. They say it's not about even the idea of the divine masculine, divine feminine. That, you know, it's just, it's another way to sort of understand ideas and archetypes. Finally, they say what we're having to do now collectively is move from the idea of the singular to the plural. You know, the I to the we, and the small self, I, to the divine self, who's already knowing itself as of the whole. And that's a huge transition to make in consciousness. I think that some of the bumps that we're seeing now are ways of sort of trying to understand ourselves and our history and the challenges that we still live with as a result of them. I mean, so much of the times we stand in, I suspect, are about re-seeing, you know, what we've known. The guide said in the first book, and they've said it probably in every book since then, that humanity is at a time of reckoning, and that a reckoning is a facing of the self in all of one's creations, which means we get to look at stuff, even when we don't want to, and often when we most don't want to.
Right. Well, speaking of the times, what have the guides said about the times we're going through now?
Well, you know, they've been speaking about this since before the last presidential election. In the Book of Truth, they started talking very specifically, I think it's even in the books prior, about the collapse of, you know, of governmental traditions and structures and economic systems and structures. And this has been coming, you know. In the Book of Truth, they said that everything that's been buried is going to come to the surface. And it's coming to the surface not so it can be blamed or shamed or called out, but so that it can be re-seen, because nothing is healed until it's seen. And the opportunity of this excavation is to bring things to the light. That's the whole point of it. If we understand that, perhaps we'd be a little kinder in this process. But they say, you know, if you have a body buried in the basement, one day it's going to stink up the whole house. And so everybody's basement is getting excavated. The country's is, the world's is. That's what I see. And so they said in a teaching today, that this is really just the beginning. You know, what we're seeing right now is the beginning of an ongoing process of change. And that I trust.
Right. Well, yeah, I can, the way I view a lot of this is the reintegration of what has separated us. And
right.
I mean, you don't have to look very far back in our human history to see just so much pain and suffering on many multiple arenas. And to drag the body, to use the metaphor of the body in the basement, to drag the body out of the basement and see it for what it is the only way we can reintegrate back to wholeness, if you will. It seems like the perspective of the upper room of consciousness views the paradigm or the narrative that any culture, any page in the book of human mythology sees it without judgment of it. It kind of reminds me of in the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna is in the chariot with the guy, and he's like, he's looking at his uncle and his kinfolk, and Lord Krishna is like, thrust in your sickle. I don't know what the exact words are. Let's have this battle, and you can claim your glory. And there's such a lack of judgment from that upper room of anything that's happened in our past, but our little selves, our egos, I think, are going to want to go out in the street and vomit when some of the darker side of humanity comes forth to be reintegrated.
I think so. You know, I mean, I don't disagree. I don't know that it has to be that hard. I expect it will. When I was doing the dictation for this book, it was actually the hardest dictation I'd ever had to do. None of it was alchemy. You know, I was feeling kind of good about everything. And then I was channeling at the Esalen Institute. And I thought that they would begin the book there. And they didn't. When I thought they would, and I thought, well, maybe they're not going to do a book here because it's a good opportunity for them because there's one group of students over many days. And then after the third day there, I woke up to the news of the suicide of a dear friend of mine from my academic life. And I walked into the classroom in a daze, and I sat down, and the guys began delivering the book that day. And I found that what was going on for those months, and really into, say, January, was all of my stuff was coming up. I mean, shockingly so. I've never been through anything like it. I really haven't. And when I read the book, I can't tell that was happening. But what it was for me was an excavation. And I'm not saying it's over, but I do feel like I am becoming myself in a very different way than I thought I might ever as a result of this experience. So I know what I think they're teaching, and I understand it primarily on a personal level, but they are speaking to the collective, how we've all invested in this idea of separation that they say is the biggest problem we have. In the book, the guides say again and again and again, you know, the only real problem we're facing is what they call the denial of the divine and how that shows itself, which is primarily in the belief in separation. So, yeah, we'll see.
Well, in alchemy, some of their languaging was talking about, to look at the world outside of you and to see it as some kind of separation. It's almost like we have to heal our relationship with the physical holodeck or platform, or this notion of the material world that we live in. They're really talking about seeing the divinity of all that is. And in our Western culture, we're so quick to slap a label on it and then slap some associated value to it. And it seems like they're trying to break up that habit or preference.
I think they are. You know, I'm a product of Western thought. It's how I was reared. I was reared without religion, but I certainly was reared with, you know, the values that one is instilled with when one is of my generation, and, you know, what success was supposed to be and what it means to be a man or a woman or valued in society. And all of that stuff, I think, gets to change and gets to be re-seen. I'm learning in my own way another experience of being through this stuff. And it is about, in some ways, unlearning or maybe forgetting is a better word, the mandates or the requirements that I inherited, because I can choose to align to those things or not. But the guides are very much teaching to the collective now. You know, that's what the whole book is. They say, you know, it's not just so much that you create your own reality. It's also you're operating in tandem with the collective and collective agreements, including the collective agreement to or belief in separation. And the upper room, they say, is where that gets, I don't want to use the word corrected, but perhaps re-seen or re-known or re-articulated, which is the word that they like.
Right. Well, to descend, so to speak, to use the metaphor of the upper room and, shall we say, the lower room, in the lower room, which is perhaps traditional human experience on Earth for the last eons of time, In order to ascend our consciousness or transcend our suffering, if you will, it's going to, like Einstein said, we can't solve the problems with the same thinking that created them. We have to evolve ourselves. And the material that you've channeled over these books certainly is an evolution of perspective, of a higher truth that we all have an opportunity to recognize and then ascend into, so to speak, into that upper room of each one of ourselves. I find it very fascinating that with your material and others that are coming forth, it's really a transcendence of all of our mythology. It's almost like there's a whole new realm of, I don't know what to call it, physics, a whole new realm of perception, a whole new realm of relationship with, quote, reality, unquote. And the material that you've brought forth really kind of affirms that idea. How do you see, do you have glimpses of how this material will change the dynamics of humanity?
No. I mean, the guides have said that the material will live on, you know, beyond my lifetime. They've been clear about that, and I'm good with that. That means hopefully there's some merit here. I know what they're teaching. I don't know and hope they're not the only teachers, you know, bringing through the idea of this level of alignment, because they are teaching alignment. They said, I was lecturing today on a new book, and, you know, they said very clearly that humanity as a whole has decided to progress, that it will happen, but that this decision was made in what they call the upper room, at the level of consciousness, the high level of consciousness that we're seeking to evolve into. That part of us, they say, is already present and is already expressing in what they would say is the higher strata. It's already there, and now we have to grapple with the ramifications of that choice, which really does seem to mean that we're going to have to look at our junk,
yeah,
you know, and deal with some of our stuff. And I find that incredibly hopeful. What they start to say today, and I've not really heard this before this way, so I was surprised by the teaching and was questioning it. They said, you know, the scaffolding to the upper room has been taken down. It is now a firmament that you can stand on and remain. That, you know, the part about, they said that there's enough of you who've made this level of alignment that it can be claimed. It can be present for those who are willing to go there. And, you know, my experience and the experience of others who are working with this stuff is we have this experience of that level of consciousness where there is no fear. And it's quite wonderful. They call it the upper world. And we come crashing down the moment something happens that's disturbing or provocative or challenging. And they're saying, you know, that's now just the residual idea of the small self still reenacting what it's known, that the transition has actually happened, so that the upper room or this level of awareness is present for us. And again, I find that very hopeful. But when they speak of humanity going through this transition, I mean, I've heard from them over the years, and it's in the books, that we have a choice. Do we want to go forward? And I hear, well, we've said yes, we will, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be a graceful experience. I don't know how it necessarily can be.
Right. Well, I mean, the title, alchemy, the notion of introducing alchemy to the human persona, if you will, if I look at archetypes and I look at the rank and file of humanity over time, alchemy is not on the top of the list in everyday human demeanor over the past centuries. And if people that are attracted to your material and read this material and choose to make the journey into the upper room, if you will, and live life from there, and experience a sense of alchemy, then it kind of it dissolves any binding to our past mythology or narrative, and it's going to take. It makes sense to me that in order to anchor this new material, this new understanding, if you will, for human beings to master the art of alchemy, and that's pretty much what this material seems to be addressing.
Well, they say we have the capacity for it. We do. You know, we've denied it. But it can be done, you know. And they also say this really isn't a new teaching. It's a very old teaching. And it's available now, and they're saying in a complete form, that they're really not leaving out the steps. So, I mean, we'll see. I think this all really depends on what people's experience is of the teaching. I like the way you describe it. I know it's what they intend. I suppose it's all about application at a certain point, and application, in the case of these teachings, is very much about alignment, and the alignment comes through these energetic attunements that the gods offer that hold them claims of truth, you know. And they've said for almost all the books, they've talked about being in accord, and they say ACCORD or ACHORD is on a piano. And I didn't understand that teaching until the last book, I think, and they really unpacked it. And a lot of the claims of truth, or each of them, is they say, as if a note played upon a piano. And as all of those notes or those attunements are realized or played at once, in the energetic field, you have the resurrected self. You have the divine expression of what they call the monad or the Christ, the manifestation. That part of you that knows who it is, what it is, and how it serves its expression as in through you. And that finally, I suppose, is the teaching. That's really the teaching. It's the alignment to that level of consciousness. And you know, like, as I said, people have to have their own experience with this in a lot of ways. Like I said, I'm a stenographer.
Well, the notion of alchemy, so much of human suffering is this notion of lack and the ego wanting to have a sense of security, and so it either projects a sense of power for that security, not a graceful sense of power, but a dominant sense of power, or hoarding, or, I mean, the notion of lack is perhaps one of the stronger motivations of less than graceful behavior of human beings on the planet. And you bring in the notion of alchemy. So now a human persona through alchemy can morph or transcend any condition of the moment in the moment. And then that changes everything. I mean, to be anchored in the truth of being able to transform the condition in the moment, then all forms of suffering fall to the wayside if we have the ability to, through alchemy, transcend any condition of the moment. I can see that as really being a game changer.
I can too. I hope it's the case. You know. The guys are pretty consistent. I don't think that they make things up. So, you know.
Well, you can't, from my perspective, you can't put out this much material and be talking out your ass. You just can't. I mean, the continuity of the material, from my perspective, seems spot on, and that's why I was kind of curious asking you about the span of what you see coming down the road. And when you talk about them having multiple more books in the queue, it just makes me think, how far in the darkness have we found ourselves to have such a journey to come out of it?
It is a journey. I think that what the guides have said about the number of books is that, you know, it's as if they're sort of taking us into the water as we can acclimate to the water. You know, you can go up into your ankles and then up to your knees. Or if you want to use another metaphor, you know, brightness entering a dark room. You don't want to go blind by being thrust in too quickly. So they bring us to the level that we can hold or move into accord to. I don't know what the books are after this. You know, I wish they would write some self-help books. I think, you know, that would be nice for me. I had lots of questions about self-help. I don't think they could care less about some of the stuff that I do. You know, how to get a date, you know, how
right.
to lose the 50 pounds. All the things, you know, I mean, I'm sure they can, but they're operating with a curriculum and their teachers.
Right.
And the curriculum that they're offering is pretty much specific. I mean, you said, you know, the one thing, you know, when I used to go through periods of questioning this, you know, could this be real? Could, you know, how is this happening? The one thing that I've been able to rest comfortably in is the fact that, you know, I don't care how articulate I may be. I'm just not capable of sitting in a chair with my eyes closed and dictating 9 books that require no editing. You know, it's just not possible.
Right.
And I do trust the integrity of the expression and the intent behind it. They're not teaching fear. They're not being manipulative. They don't take away our free will at all. In fact, they speak to it very directly. And again, like I said, I hope people are supported by this. I hope the book is doing, or the books are doing, what the guides intended them to do. And for all I know, for what I hear, they seem quite happy about how this is going. You know, this part of my life is in their hands. I'll show up for the interview. I'll show up for the dictation. but finally it's their book, and I think how readers find their books is actually something that they play a part in too. So I leave that alone.
Well, now, some of the people that either read the books or perhaps attend the gatherings that you have talk about having a profound energetic experience. What would you say to that?
Well, the books themselves are energetic transmissions that work directly on the reader. The guides said that in the first book. They've said it, I think, in every book. The books are experienced more so than read. It's less of an intellectual teaching than an experiential one. When I Am the Word was published in 2010, there was no press to speak of. Nobody knew who I was. And people started finding this book, and the reviews started coming out, and people were saying things like, I'm reading this book and my body's vibrating. I'm reading this book and I'm seeing auras. And so the energetic component's always been present. In the live workshops, when people are working with the attunements, say in partners or in small groups, the energy is extremely palpable. There's sort of no way to avoid it. Even people who've had no experience with that kind of phenomena have opened up to it. And I like that because it allows people to be in their knowing. You know, they're not deferring to me or even deferring to the guides. They're claiming their own experience of this in a way that they can know. And the guides say again and again, to know is to realize. So, yeah, it's a part of how this whole thing seems to happen and continues to, because, you know, we're the music, they say, that is being transposed to be played anew, to be played in the higher octave of what they call the upper room.
Right. Well, not to put you on the spot or anything, but do they have anything to say to you and me in this moment?
Oh, I'll ask. I channeled already today for the new book, so let me see if they want to say things. I hear we would like to say a few things, not what Paul wants to hear, not what Paul wants to hear, but perhaps this gentleman might like it, but perhaps this gentleman might like it, the idea of who you are. The idea of who you are, finally, the idea of who you are, is what is being renowned, the sense of something that's new, the sense of self you have become accustomed to, utilized in commerce, utilized in commerce, negotiated lives with, negotiated your lives with, that is what is being renowned. That is what is being renown. You are becoming uncloaked. You are becoming uncloaked, unmasked, reseen if you wish, as you are beyond the small self-sense, as you are beyond the small self-sense of identity, going back to, that you have grown to accustom to, humanity itself. Humanity itself is shedding skins, seeing anew, and often seeing what they've created, and often seeing what they have created to poor effect, ill effect. And the opportunity now is to lift these things, what we call the upper room, to what we call the upper world, that they may be renowned, re-seen, re-articulated in the high octave, of Christ's mind, the divine self as who you are. The divine self, as who you are, indeed has come, is seeking to be seen and known, is seeking to be seen and known and reclaimed as who and what you truly are, as who and what you truly are, period. And the same period.
Wow. Well, I thank you for that. I was kind of hesitant to ask you, but I'm glad I did now.
Oh, that's fine.
Well, time flies by pretty fast. Do you have any closing thoughts?
You know, right now I don't. You know, I'm in this place of big questions about my life that can't be answered in these times. And if I let that be okay, I'm okay. So I'm just happy to be here. And I'm pleased to speak with you again. It's always a pleasure.
Well, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. It's the material that that you swim in, so to speak, I find fascinating, spot on. I get a very clean feeling of integrity, of purpose, of whatnot. So as always, it's always a pleasure having you on the show. And I want to thank you, Paul, for being our guest tonight. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
We've been talking with Paul Selig, and the topic tonight has been Alchemy, which is book two of Beyond the Known trilogy. What a conversation. What a notion of evolving ourselves into that place of being an alchemist, evolving our consciousness. What's really powerful about the text that Paul has channeled over the years is it's really focused on awakening a deeper truth within each one of us, awakening or re-realizing, if you will, inherent potentials that exist within each one of us. I always like the notion of Jesus Christ saying, well, you're going to do everything that I have done and more. And yet, when we think of ourselves as the personification of Jesus Christ, or in other words, we've arrived at the words that he has offered us, where we are performing everything he has done and more, not too many people are willing to take an identity behind that, take the notion of that as sincerely possible, that they're sincerely moving forward in their life to fulfill that promise. You know, it's always a pleasure spending time with you. I love bringing shows like this to you. I believe the most powerful substance in our human narrative is our own human consciousness. Consciousness. The consciousness of our humanity. So go to newhumanliving.com and sign up for the newsletter and look at the material there. New Human Living is a platform that what I think is unique about New Human Living is we don't want to offer you some kind of a magical template of how to live. We don't want to offer you a belief system or a way of being, if you will, but rather heal your relationship with the truth of what is. Heal your relationship with the truth of who you are. And the more you can embody your truth, I think the more you can fulfill the vision that your soul had before you're even born. I'm your host, Les Jensen. Always a pleasure. Until next time, thanks for listening.
This has been a New Human Living radio broadcast. You can raise your own personal power with Personal Power Fundamentals Home Study Course at newhumanliving.com. Thanks for listening.